Hello and welcome to Declarations of War. Host for this evening, myself, Alexev Card, and of course, Ninja Turtle.
Hey guys.
Oh man, it has been quite a week or two. FanFest happened, so that was huge. And with FanFest happening, of course, tons of other things happen as well. We had Turtle there, so we're going to get the live FanFest rundown. But first of all, I want to give a shout out to everyone who attended. Hopefully I'll see you guys next year, and a very special shout out to all the new members of CSM10, which we will get into quite shortly.
Yeah, big shout out to everybody that was at FanFest. Really, it was a great time.
Our sponsor, EveTimeCode, EveTimeCode.com, where your business counts. I'm sure Diana was there. It's the owner of EveTimeCode.
I ran into her, actually. Said hi.
Oh, cool. Did she buy you dinner?
No, it was like breakfast time, actually.
Does that for me, I guess. Anyway, she is the best. And she gives so much back to the community, so go support her, please. EveTimeCode.com. One Plex for every $250 spent, you get a free Plex. Free Plex! And they accept Bitcoins, so if you have those, good place to offload them. And I'm being told, new players, fuck them. I don't think that's related to the EveTimeCode advert, but...
That was here, man. I don't know what that's about. That was here.
New players. Fuck 'em. Fuck 'em.
Somebody put that in here.
It wasn't me. Kingblade?
That
question mark? Alright, poll results. We asked our audience, what do you think of the proposed SOV changes? 59%, nearly 60%, say it is much better than our current system, which I would agree with. We've got a fair bit, 23%, that say it's different, but it won't actually fix anything. I'm not so sure on that one. 18% say that it's bad and they should go a completely different direction. However, as you might expect, literally no one listening to this podcast likes the current system and would rather keep that. I don't find those numbers difficult to believe.
Yeah, not surprising.
Turtle, where do you fall on this poll?
I can't remember if I voted or not, but no, it's better, right? So it's different, but it won't fix anything. Like, I think maybe that speaks a little bit to like incentivizing NullSec a little bit more. But I mean, these changes definitely do fix SOV. So I mean, it's in the better direction.
Yeah, I mean the NullSec economics issue is sort of separate from the mechanics itself, I think. Or at least a little bit.
Well, I mean, it gives you a reason to go there, which then kind of gives you a reason to take SOV. They kind of, like, lead in, you know, to one another, but the mechanics are definitely separate, for sure.
You can redo the ability to flip a system from one to the other without touching, like, how much money you make from anomalies or implementing some kind of new NullSec-only way to earn ISK.
Sure, no doubt.
Well, there must have been a lot of talk about the new SOV system at FanFest. How was that?
FanFest was a very different experience than last year, because I went last year too. So one of the biggest changes they had this year was putting the keynote on Thursday instead of like Saturday, and then on Saturday having a closing kind of wrap up with not much new information, just kind of more just about the feels, right? So like Thursday we like started running straight away just into the content, and it really kind of made like Friday and Saturday feel like a bit of a lull, to be honest. The eclipse was Friday morning, so I don't know if that had something to do with it, you know, it could kind of breaking up the schedule a little bit, I guess. But I mean, there was so much momentum on Thursday. It just really felt like Friday and Saturday, there just wasn't a lot going on, even though, statistically speaking, I mean, there was more going on at FanFest this year than ever before. I think this is the most, because they added all those player presentations, I think this is the most presentations that there's been at a FanFest, I think they said. But the momentum and the feel of it was completely different. Aside from that, it was as amazing as it was last year, for sure. It didn't feel like we got any real huge reveals this year, which I don't think we did, only because stuff is just coming out so quickly now. It's not like it's building up for a year and then all getting dumped on you at FanFest anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we weren't really expecting any, like, bombshells like, say, like, Legion was last year, that kind of bombshell. We weren't expecting it, and that was good because we didn't really get it. So the pace, just in general, I think, was a lot calmer, which was kind of cool. It was more about, like, it definitely felt this year more about hanging out with friends than it did, like, having to go to a round table every hour on the hour all day for 3 days. Like, because that's what I did.
On the fear that you would miss something.
Yeah, exactly, because that's what I did last year. I mean, there was not an hour at FanFest where I wasn't in something if there was something going on, and I mean, this year I was probably in round tables less than I was out, so. Just a different, totally different feel, but kind of way cooler, more of a kind of a get-together, I guess, chill, hang out with your friends kind of feel than, like, hurry up, you might miss this if you blink.
Right. On the keynote kind of thing, I can see the reason why they went with it early, because there wasn't any big reveal. So it was more of a, hey, we're going to do this, and then we're going to, like, theme, like, set expectations for the rest of the weekend. Like, hey, we really just want to talk to you about the stuff that we've already announced. We don't really have anything to really show.
That was
and
exactly
I think that was
it.
The only way to play it, because if they save that keynote for the last day, I don't think people would have been pleased.
Yeah, that was exactly it. Everything that came after that keynote was really just like, you know, almost like follow-ups in a way. And there was some new stuff, like especially in the VR department, which we'll get to in a second. But yeah, the roundtables themselves really felt more of a kind of just a tagging along to the keynote. It was funny. There was a couple things before the keynote, too, so we did still get a few answers of wait for the keynote, but it definitely wasn't as bad as last year.
How was the meeting of the other podcasters? As I know, we released the sort of joint episode with Crossing Zebras and a whole bunch of other podcasts. It sounded like you guys had a really good time.
Yeah, Crossing Zebras and Eve Down Under. So Xander got a bunch of us together, me, Bam Stroker, Xander, I'm trying to think of who was sitting in the circle. Otto Bismarck from Pandemic Legion, Otakashawa from Pandemic Legion, and Naiden from Galmill, who's also on Crossing Zebras. And yeah, we it was after the final closing thing on Saturday, so we were all a little tight, and we just basically sat in a circle and just fucked around for an hour. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. CCP Mimic stopped by and hung out with us for a few minutes, and definitely took good care of us in getting us a spot, and thanks again to her for that. But no, it was fun. It was cool to get to meet those guys, and especially Xander, because we fuck with each other so much, like on Twitter, and just always shots fired. And it was really cool just to get to hang out with him, because it was exactly the same way in real life. We were just shooting shots at each other the whole time, but just having so much fun with it.
All coming from a good place, Xander. All coming from a good place.
Yeah, it totally was. I mean, we were just... we're both people that, we're both trolls, basically, is the way it looks, and we just had a lot of fun. So, no, it's cool to get to meet those guys and hang out and talk and spread the e-fame.
All right, give us the high-low. What was the high for you?
In terms of content,
We'll separate it out. Okay. We'll do, like, a high of content, a low of content, and then a high of, like, the social metagame and a low of the social metagame.
Okay, I got all of them. So the high of the content for me was definitely the virtual reality things they had going on. Last year they had Valkyrie, which is really cool. This year they had Valkyrie, but instead of that on the first floor and the north side of the building, that kind of tucked away cubby where they had Valkyrie set up last year, they had it on the second floor in the PvP room. Put it up on the big screens, and it was much more of a to-do. But so then that cubby was left empty, right? So they packed that with three other VR games that they had been developing. Well, not so much games, but I guess demos, you'd call them. The first one was you are based in a turret of a ship, and you, like, are doing exactly what you would think that infers. You're shooting at stuff. You have to, the end boss is an Abaddon, and you have to blow up his turrets. Really, really cool. The smoothness and the really how put together and finished it felt was really amazing for just being a demo. The second one was ship spinning, aptly named. You put on your VR helmet and you were presented a three-dimensional model of an Algos. And you could reach out, you could take this Algos, you could lift it up, you could push it down to raise it vertically or lower it vertically. You could take your hands and spin it around clockwise or counterclockwise. If you leaned forward, it would zoom in and give you an X-ray view, and every inch of that ship was detailed, down to music playing in the captain's quarters, down to people walking through the hallways. There were Easter eggs all up and down that bitch, and it was one of the most amazing things EVE-related that I've ever done in my life. Just because it was so novel in a way, and it's what the future of the ship viewer in game should feel like, should be like, is you can take the ship and literally just spin it around with your hands and pull it apart and look inside of it. You could make it shoot at like asteroids and stuff, throw up its shields just for like the visual effects and stuff. But it was really gorgeous. And so I played those first two. The third one I did not get a chance to play, and that was actually a two-player virtual reality game where you it was. God, I want to say it was kind of like Tron, with a thing where they're like throwing the ping pong balls at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like wizard shit, like fire and ice and stuff. And so you'd be like throwing fireballs at people, and they'd have to like, you know, throw an ice thing and like stop it or whatever. And it looked really cool. I just never got around to it. But all in all, I mean, they are pushing the VR really hard, which is really cool. And I mean, again, even, you know, the stuff that they're calling demos is just really polished and really refined. And, I mean, fuck, that first one was running on, I want to say it was a Galaxy S5. And they just plug it in. They just plug it into the, like, if you can imagine a Morpheus headset, but without the screen. So it's just the lenses. And the cell phone acts as the screen and runs the entire app. And, I mean, that in itself amazed me.
Crazy.
Yeah, the technology and the way that they just busted up the technology like that, because, you know, a lot of people have S5s, and when the S6 comes out, that's going to be the next step in that. And so, you know, people already have these phones, and you're really, really increasing the access to this technology by separating the components and, you know, utilizing components that people might already have.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. We also... For the player presenters, apparently we had a chance to play Valkyrie on PC. I can't remember what the name of it is. It's something... but whatever version of Valkyrie they have on the PC now, we were almost got a chance to do that, except we were emailed 20 minutes before the fact, and I don't think anybody really went to that, so...
Ah, bummer. Yeah. What was your low content-wise?
Honestly, probably not getting to play Valkyrie. on the PC, but no, that's cool. It was a press group that just canceled at the last minute or something, I'm sure. So, no, I think the low would probably be, I think going back to the, rhythm of it all and, just the rhythm of it. It felt really weird. Part of me really kind of liked the frantic pace of, last year and just always kind of running and always like looking for that information and just really felt like you were taking full advantage of it, I think. And part of me this year felt like I didn't really take full advantage of it, even though I know that I didn't honestly miss anything. And so, I mean, it's not really a low, it's just kind of a difference.
That's fair. All right, what about the social high?
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so Pandemic Legion was rolling like 40, 50 deep. I mean, just a huge crowd of people. And so I think probably the biggest pro socially was just getting to hang out with them and watching how, like, the social lines kind of just dissolved. Like, for example, I went to the PL dinner, sitting at my table. To my right was a Black Legion guy. To my left was Lazarus Tellraven. Headliner and Maytag Man were sitting across from me. Next to them was Licton Condor, and on the other side of that was CCP Larrikin, who just got hired a couple weeks ago. And I mean, it was really just like people. It wasn't CFC, you know, a Waffle, PL, Brave. Like that wasn't even really part of it. So I think that's probably what people underestimate is just how the social lines really do dissolve when you're at a place like that and just having fun and, you know, nobody really gives a fuck, right? Just hang out and mm-hmm. If you're a bro and you're, like, not a total spurg, like, you're gonna fit in. and the low socially, I think, I didn't really go out as much as I wanted to be honest. Just because, like, I hadn't slept in 2 days before getting there. And then my presentation was 3 o'clock on Saturday. So, like, I didn't go out Friday night because I didn't want to be a ball of shit. And so really the only night I partied was Saturday night. I mean, still hung out, you know, like, went out, had a couple beers or whatever. But not like last year where I just destroyed myself. But, yeah, I mean, there really is no low socially. Like, it's all good.
All right, I guess one of the big news from FanFest, maybe it was shortly before FanFest, I'm not sure on the timeline here, but the announcement that Structures were getting a complete revamp. And when I say complete revamp, it sounds like a complete ground-up rethinking of what they are, what they do, and how we interact with them.
There's almost nothing that resembles the old system in what they're thinking about doing.
I don't actually think there is anything resembling the old system. I mean, they're completely redoing the fitting, the anchoring.
Well, conceptually speaking, with like the tethers and your ship being safe in a pause, like that's kind of still conceptually the same, right? But yeah, no, I dig what you're saying. Like, there's no structures that are the same. Well, I mean, gates, I guess, but even the things that exist now are getting radically changed.
Yep, so the new structures, they're not going to have any anchoring restrictions, or at least very few, it sounds like. POS shields are going away. You're going to be able to anchor your ship to the POS, or really any of these structures, it sounds like. The smaller ones, you'll be able to moor your ship to them, which will make it invulnerable, but presumably if the structure dies, your ship will then be shootable. And they're adding a whole bunch of new stuff. Like, they're getting rid of labs, and they're just making a laboratory thing that you can then fit, much like a ship.
Yeah,
so it's not going to be like 6 different assembly arrays or whatever. There's going to be an assembly platform or whatever, and then you're going to add stuff to it.
Yeah, they're really removing like the specifics to it all, and just making really kind of broad categories of structures, and then you get to kind of customize them. And they're all going to have sizes now, too, based, like, on ships. So, I mean, research labs, for example, are going to come in, like, a large or an extra-large variety.
And the extra-larges are going to actually look extra-large, like, larger than a Titan.
Yeah, like, station size, almost, kind of. I mean, like, some of the graphics they're using for, like... Okay, yeah, here we go. So, research headquarters, for example. The large ones you will be able to anchor your ship to, but the extra large ones you'll be able to dock your ship into. You're talking about these things almost being like stations.
Mm-hmm.
They're varying...
I mean, that's really going to shake things up.
Yeah, they're varying everything about them, like how much cargo they can hold, like what you have to do to take them over, if it's entosis or damage or entosis plus sight, which who knows what that means.
Maybe it means that sites will spawn from the entosis link, which will probably be the administration things, because they're going to be the new hubs, basically. I mean, they're not going to be the new hubs, but they're going to be connected to SAV and occupancy, so it's not hard to imagine they'll have the little entosis capture sites spawn if you do something to them.
They're really busting up stations, too, making them really specific.
You're also going to be able to add weapons to these, not just POSs, but also all this other stuff. Much like a ship, I imagine they'll have some roll bonuses on some structures versus others.
That's exactly like a ship, dude. I'm looking at 6 railguns, 2 smart bombs, 2 points, and 3 ECMs on this fucking research station.
I think that's funny, and I guess you're going to be able to moor or dock your ship at it and actually control those, which will be fun.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to give it some sort of defense, right? Like, if these things are going to be going down in place of towers that would traditionally house whatever you're doing, you know, and those towers have defense, like, you can't leave those defenseless now. I mean, it makes sense, but it's cool. It kind of puts it on a more specific individual level.
Yeah, and I think it's going to give them some bite, but it doesn't sound like they're going to be overwhelming like a Death Star used to be. so they're going to be meaningful, but not like, well, we need to bring 50 people or we can't attack this thing at all kind of shit.
Yeah, I can't imagine that a research station has very good tracking with capital-sized rails.
Exactly.
But yeah,
but,
so...
you know, if you're there to defend your research station with some daredevils, you know, maybe it can help you out.
Or if you don't go with the biggest one, so the sizes that they're putting on structures correlate to the size of modules that you use. So the like a medium-sized structure will use medium-sized guns, an extra-large structure will use extra-large guns, on and on. So, I mean, it's going to be totally different attacking like an XL research station versus a medium. I mean, in ship choice, in how you take it over, what you have to do. It's cray-cray.
Probably the most exciting new thing to come out of this, completely new thing, are the observatory platforms. I am most excited about these. They're going to be able to alter the information that displays on the map and presumably goes out to places like Dotlan. So you can, for instance, inflate or deflate or completely obscure the number of ships destroyed, active pilots in system. It's not a hard stretch to imagine this has something to do with local and 00, since they announced that local is finally going to get changed as part of this this overall sovereignty 00 update thing. So that could be some very interesting combinations there, and I know that my alliance is particularly interested in learning more details about this, because maybe this could be a thing we could professionalize somehow.
I will qualify one thing, and so the wording in the dev blog is decrease or block star map filters in the solar systems they're deployed. So I'm not 100% sure if that actually means streaming data out of the API, or excuse me, filtering data out of the API, which would be kind of cool. I mean, you really have that like total information blackout, but don't know that for sure.
Well, I think it'd be sort of shitty if it didn't, because then no one would use the in-game map. Everyone would use the third-party tools, and
in-game
the whole
map
structure
updates.
Would be pointless.
In-game map updates faster, though. When you're using .lan for kill counts, that's your deficit is time.
Yeah.
If you could block the in-game map, people getting that information, you know, in 5 to 10 minutes, and then they have to wait, you know, 30 minutes for the API to update. You know, that's still a big difference.
Maybe in a few niche situations, but I think it definitely undercuts the cool factor of that module.
Frankly, I don't think a lot of people use the in-game map anyways, so...
Yeah, neither do I. I'm sure some new players would, but everybody that knows .lan pretty much uses .lan.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like
everybody...
the Melrose Diner of third-party EVE applications.
Everybody hits F10 once, but usually not again.
But yeah, I mean, depending on how this will work and what you can do with it and how easy they are to defend and deploy and all that kind of stuff, it might be, you know, kind of a fun thing for us to do. I know that the idea of it, like information warfare and maintaining an intelligence network and all that kind of stuff, is very appealing. So
yeah,
I'm sure we're not
like,
the only people that think so.
Taking over tracking capabilities from NPC agents, because those are usually in high sec, which means they're not accessible to people in low, and null sec, because you typically have to grind whatever agent that is in low sec or null sec. So being able to like use that to track players would be super, super cool. And the scariest part is effect or pinpoint cloak users, which not 100% sure about that.
Yeah, that's going to have to be very finely tuned. In principle, I'm always fine with it, and the sense being that, well, if you're at the controls and you can just cloak again, so it has to be a thing where there's a reasonable cooldown for it, or if they are bringing you on grid to the cloaker, that, you know, it's enough variation there that you're literally you're not pinpointing them, because that sounds just awful. But maybe if you land 10 kilometers off him with a big fleet, he has to react and warp away, something like that.
Yeah.
Fine with that. There should be countermeasures to AFK cloaking. The problem always is the counters that the anti-AFK cloakers suggest were really just counters to cloaking, period. It's not the cloak that's the problem. It's the fact that you can't do anything to someone, whether or not they're at the computer, is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I know, I don't, I get the argument, I understand where they're coming from. At the same point, if they're AFK, like, you just kind of have to just live with it and, like, go about your business in a way. Yes, it adds a little bit of risk to your scenario, but, you're right, like, every suggestion is like, oh, just no cloaks, and it's like, well, that's not really gonna work.
And the biggest nerf to AFK cloaking is to remove local, right? Because if you don't know he's there and he's AFK, then he can't affect your game at all.
Right, but then you're touching so many other aspects of the game, like...
I know, but it's just to drive the point that the only reason AFK cloaking is effective is because the psychological factor of,
right,
this guy could come back at any moment.
Right, adds a little bit of pressure, a little bit of risk, but that's, and, you know, to me, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Because,
no,
honestly, if the guy is, honestly, AFK, like, if you can just mentally get over it, you'll find that it probably adds very little risk to your situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other big piece of... Well, do you want to say anything else about structures before we move on?
I want to see gates with guns. Literally.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Player constructible gate guns? Very cool. I'm a little bit worried about some parts of gates... But I'm more worried that CCP will not go the whole hog with it. Like, gates have to connect to places. So, like, establishing a player framework will change Eve's geography if they really fully embrace it.
Yeah. They're talking about having the service modules do, like, a lot of stuff to, like, affect warp speed, affect jump capabilities for capitals, like, wormhole spawning behavior, modify that. So it's going to have a lot of... Sounds like it's going to have a lot more far-reaching effects than just bouncing between a system and another.
There was talk of a, sort of like a jump bridge, but more of a cannon version, where it's almost like a micro-jump unit anchorable, but instead of putting you 100 kilometers, it launches you a certain number of light years between systems, and your fleet could either end up in the same system, or different spots in the same systems, depending on how accurate it is.
That sounds fun.
And you just, like, get catapulted long distances. And they brought it up as sort of like a day trip mechanic where you could launch, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to come back. I think that'd be tons of fun.
Get launched really in a high sec or something as a fucking low sec.
Yeah, if you aim poorly, sure. Or you could, like, you know, travel, like, way more than a jump bridge would ever take you, and you end up, like, in some random system at some random point. It's just like, oh, well, I'm here now. Where's the rest of my fleet? And they're like five actual jumps away because of the way the geography was laid out. They're like, oh, balls, and there's an enemy fleet here. Oops, guess I'm going to die. Or maybe you land right on top of a mining fleet. Who knows? That's the best part.
Conceptually, that seems like it would be a cool deployable to affect gates in that way. Like, for example, if you were jumping a gate... or if you're in a system, say, that has three adjacent systems and you're trying to jump to one system, maybe it shoots you to the other one instead, and you either have to go back through or go around or something. Like, that'd be kind of cool as, like, an offensive deployable.
There's a lot of creative things they could do there. I just hope they really go outside the box with this stuff and really wow us.
Well, based on what Ytterbium is showing us, it's the box isn't even in the same room anymore.
The other big piece of EVE news we want to talk about is the South being on fire. A lot of stuff has happened since we last came to you. Let's see where to begin. Test has left the Hero Coalition, and they've absorbed a Hero Co alliance as well. They've deployed to Wicked Creek and are now fighting Phoebe Freeport and all those guys for control over those stations. They've already picked up at least one. Hero itself has decided, hey, we're going to go fight in Delve Fountain. So they've joined the Nulli Secunda side of the Delve Fountain War against Goonswarm. Goonswarm has, for its part, as far as I know, been pushing back into Delve, having successfully defended Fountain so far. Catch itself, for obvious reasons of no one being there anymore, is probably going to die pretty soon. I know the Russians have already come in. Pandemic Legion is already there. I'm not sure what they're up to, but Turtle, you might have some ideas.
Yeah, so the final station timer for Head GP was a few days ago, and there was some talk of them putting up a fleet, and but no, we never actually got any resistance on that. So we flipped the station and actually turned it into a fee port almost immediately. So those guys could evac stuff, I guess, a little bit. So yeah, I was down in Head GP for a couple of days just fucking around. We were just camping the nearby area or whatever. Yeah, so, but PL took a few strategic points of Sov. Nothing major. I don't think any more than like four or five systems, two or three stations.
Just FRR, GE Tech, and Head GP. And Head, it's a pretty good collection.
Yeah, but it's logistics chain, right? Capital, super capital, and material. So, I mean, that's really why they do it. But, yeah, I mean, AAA literally did not miss a beat. They were, the second catch started to fall, they were there. And, which, I mean, doesn't really surprise me. It's their ancestral home. So, I you know, this is probably the start of AAA grinding all that shit back. But,
yeah, I would think so. But yeah, it'll be interesting when they come knocking on GE and Head, because those are two very important systems to them.
I don't honestly think PL wants to hold them forever, so I wouldn't be half surprised if they just got flipped to AAA for some sum of money.
Mm.
Wouldn't half surprise me, because so PL is still based in LGK right now, which is two jumps away from Head, the midpoint being GE TAC, so it's not like they couldn't put supers there if they needed to, so I don't really know if AAA wants to brawl for it. But if they coughed up some money, I think PL would probably flip it. But I don't know. Who knows? Maybe something's changed.
I think I'd like to see them brawl for it. It's been a while since AAA's done that.
It's so much fun fighting in catch. Like, I have the time of my life out there. The region is really such a cool design. There was a lot of content out there for a while. Not so much anymore, but I mean, it'd be fun definitely to brawl out in there for a while. I just don't know if anybody really wants to do it. Over a station, anyways.
It's more than a station to AAA.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, they just might. And there's also a question of how much money they have in the tank.
Yeah.
Because they've been grinding at 3GD and that GE, that whole area, for a while now. And I don't know if they have. They probably have the 6.4s in Stain, but, you know, who knows what other funding sources they've got or don't have.
But yeah, it was a good time. Kind of wish they Brave put up a defense, but no biggie.
Yep. Well, that's pretty much it. A lot of rearrangement. Some large fights have gone down with capital fleets dropping, but AAA coming back is the big thing. Test leaving is the big thing. And right now, I think it's just probably going to not change terribly much for a little while. I think you'll, like Turtle said, you'll probably see AAA increase its holdings in catch. You'll probably see Test increase their holdings in Wicked Creek. I think Delve/Fountain is probably going to remain a standstill. I'm surprised that all this is even going down, though, because they did announce the Sov changes, and it's coming up in June, which is not terribly long to wait. So I thought people would probably, like, just wait. But it seems like no, they want to push now.
I don't know if they want to wait for somebody else to come in and snipe, you know, what they want, and then have to have another person to uproot in the new sovereignty system, which, you know, given the time zone thing, you know, would be pretty hard for a Russian alliance to start fucking around in the U.S. and Euro time zones, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they can do it on their own time and their own terms, and maybe it takes a longer and maybe it's a bigger headache, but it could be an even bigger headache for them come Entosis Lynx.
It's also a question of playing to their strengths, right? So if you've got like a big super capital fleet and lots of dudes that can grind structures down but aren't terribly great fighting on their own without your main FCs, then you'll probably have a large incentive to grind as much as you can now. Because when Entosis Links start to happen, you're going to need a lot more, like, distributed FCs, like, leading smaller fleets around. And your super capitals are not going to count for as much in the direct sovereignty conflict. They're more going to be just counters to capitals. So, it could be a use-it-or-lose-it kind of thing.
Yeah, if they can take a... I think they probably just want to take a foothold before that all falls, rather than trying to have to fight their way into catch with that new system.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, they're starting to carve out the west end of that over by, like, MYTAC through TACO, through GD, like you said. Which is fine. I mean, there's nobody defending that space, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised about AAA. I mean, I'm surprised specifically about Test and, to a lesser extent, Goonswarm, Nully. Mainly I'm surprised about Test. They had a pretty good thing going with Hero Coalition, where they didn't really have to do any work. People just kind of kowtowed to them because of their size. I don't know why they decided to just like, let's go invade an entire new region on our own.
I don't know. Summer's coming. People get antsy, I guess. I don't know.
Whatevs. Good luck, Phoebe Freeport, pulling for you.
Those guys have the most ridiculous fits. Every last male I see for them is just the most A-Lod fit in the world.
Gotta love the attitude, though.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I was really surprised we Freeported Head, to be honest, but like once I started bringing alts in there, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. It'd be cool to have the Freeport thing in the new South system.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be doing it. That makes a lot of sense to do. And I think it'll make more sense once they fix the economic side of 0-0, like we were talking about, where you can actually, if you were to open your thing up for a Freeport, people that are PvPing, mining, ratting, etc., and your systems can count for your SOV index. I think that'll be probably pretty huge. Which already kind of does, but not very effectively. Anyway, speaking of 0-0, right next door to Ketch, we have our first major 0-0 deployment in Providence for No Not Believing. Pravi is the old stomping ground of Noir, but it seems like Providence upgraded since we were last there. They've gotten a lot tougher. I think I credit Pandemic Legion being in the area so much. Because, I mean, they've always been under constant attack, but now it seems like they've actually learned lessons and are putting together really dynamite, hard-to-run camps. And they're, like, Johnny on the spot with docking up, so their intel channels are very strong, much stronger than they obviously used to be. It's actually been much more challenging than ever before. That said, we do have over 70% efficiency with pretty good damage dealt. And we have a lot of time left on this contract. It's only the first 5 days. So it's an ongoing project. I think Trust has had some growing pains to do. A lot of people who, you know, it's one of those things where you're never going to be ready to go in the contract until you go in the contract. So I definitely had some people who have never really been in a contract environment or hadn't been for a long time, getting their legs back, and we're constantly having to adjust to Providence's tactics and vice versa. So it's a very interesting contract, going well so far, and hopefully will go even better as the coming weeks and days unfold.
I will say that CVA showed up more than once into Ketch, which actually kind of surprised me, to be honest. I didn't expect them to leave Providence, I guess. Not to sound shitty about it, but I typically don't poke too far out of their little area, right? But no, they more than once ran some fleets in to help Brave, busted up some of our camps, and no, it was cool to see them kind of get a little more outward facing. I think the stereotype of Providence and CVA and Providence is the whole Provi block is very cloistered and very inward-facing.
I think they still are. I mean, they definitely pay attention to Ketch and always have. They have some systems in Ketch, as a matter of fact. We'll probably expand into Ketch once they basically realize that Hero is not going to defend it. I wouldn't be shocked if they take a few more systems there. I think the difference is they've gotten more aggressive on the PvP front, where the fleets that they do field are stronger and more coherent than before.
Yeah, they weren't kitchen sink doctrines too. They were like actual doctrines, like Nagas and with Logi, and I was like, oh, what is this? Who taught them this?
What? Where are you? What have you done with CVA? Yeah, it's definitely. Probably our most difficult Providence contract to date. It feels like all of the Care Bears have fled Pravi for them. Not all of them, but a fair bit of them. And the only people left are, like, their actual hardened warrior types.
Like I said, still doing well. Just a matter of
getting our kill volume up and keeping our efficiency strong going forward. Looking for recruits if you guys want to help out. And I want to give a shout out to Arcantantix Carpe Noctem. He's really busted his ass recruiting for Gnar and Trust, specifically making a lot of connections with the Australian guys. We have a cool alliance that's been working with us in the Australian time zone, and that's largely due to Ark's just sheer hustle. So continual props to Ark for doing his great work. And hopefully we'll have some cool Australians joining us. I know he's trying to get a few through Gnar Academy. I know he's trying to work on Corpse. Direct recruits for Gnar. The guy's all over the place. So major props. This week in Mercs, our friends Mercenary Coalition lost a Corp, Blackstorm Cartel. It's a major U.S. time zone Corp of theirs that just completely fail cascaded and left the Alliance. However, they've picked up the Corelli Corporation and the Space Cossacks, which are a European Alliance Corp, excuse me. And they currently sit at 171 members, which is basically what they were at before. So congrats to them for recovering. They lost a Titan to Snuffbox. Got hot dropped, which I'm sure is stung for them. But I have talked to members of the Alliance, and they're doing pretty well on the money front from taking contracts, including some high-sec jobs, which have paid them pretty well. So I think their spirits are high, and the super loss isn't really phasing them too much. They're definitely cool, and we're still quite happy to be friends with them. If you listen to the podcast, and then probably in the next couple episodes, you'll probably hear more about Trust and Mercenary Coalition working together. I think we have some plans to do some stuff in the probably next month, I'm sure. EveBet. Eve-bet.com. Shoutouts to Bam Stroker. They are New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real-life sports and Eve stuff with ISK. They've had hundreds of trillions of bets since opening, so they're a service that you can trust. And, I mean, you're talking Lions Tournament, NCAA, UFC. I've made a lot of money on UFC fights. Just bet Ronda Rousey and Jon Jones down the card, and you'll be fine. They've also got blackjack, slots, and they're constantly adding stuff that you can bet on, all of it with industry standard odds, so you know you're getting a fair shake. And it's really just a fun thing, so go check it out, eve-bet.com. Finally, we want to talk a little bit about the new CSM. We have a new CSM. It's a bit surprising in terms of its makeup.
Yeah, it is.
One of the permanent members was Sugar Kyle, which blew my mind. Goonswarm did not get a single permanent member. It's actually Sugar and Manfred Sidious, which is fucking amazing.
That's a great combo, right? That same thing that happened to CSC happened to PL. They fronted four candidates, and both Xander and Bobmon didn't get on, which Bobmon, not surprised. Xander, very, very surprised.
I was pretty surprised Xander.
He was really, really vocal on CSM9 and did a lot of work, even in just relaying information and just being accessible, right? Like, that itself goes a long way. I was super surprised. But yeah, I think that PL specifically probably fronted too many candidates, and I don't know if the CFC did the same thing, but...
Yeah, I don't know how that worked. I guess they split their number one votes or something like that.
And, I mean, most of the names you still recognize, right? Like, Cyan Kumamoto, Steve Ronikin, like
well,
you said,
let's go down the list here. So we've got Steve Ronikin, he'd been reelected. Cyan Kumatomo, reelected. Sugar Kyle, reelected to a permanent seat. Core Blood Brothers, re-elected, and defected to the CFC on stage. is that Corbex or Core Blood? Forget.
I think that was Corbex.
It might have been I think it was Corbex. Yeah.
Yeah. He's only been in Goons for, 2 weeks.
Mike Azariah, re-elected. Corbex, re-elected, and defected. Endy, Sort Dragon, somehow got elected again. Gorga, who I was not terribly familiar with before this. Thoric Frosthammer, who was also not terribly familiar with. I think the dark horse of the entire thing, Chance Ravine, who apparently got the RVB vote. He's the leader of Wingspan. Sort of popped up in Eve parlance. His corp kind of came out of nowhere and captured everybody's imagination. He got elected. Jane Fillon. Manny, as we talked about, and he's in. And Kigali Kigali. It's a pretty diverse bunch. Overwhelmingly 0-0 in character, but I don't think that's surprising anyone.
Yeah, Kigali caught the BNI vote, got pushed in there, but I think just the general trend is that the big blocks didn't have as much pushing power as they did in the past.
Well, you say that, but a lot of 0-0 guys did make it on. I mean, Kigali, Manfred, Jane's NPSI, but he's definitely 0-0. Chance, NPSI, but definitely 0-0. Sword Dragon, ND, now Corbex, Core Blood, Scion. I mean, that's a lot of 0-0-age. Not that it bothers me at all.
Yeah, but you don't have to be a block to be in 0-0, right? Like
Thoric.
Only a few of those guys rode in on the biggest alliances.
That's true. And like I said, yeah. It doesn't bother me at all. 0-0 candidates, sort of a mixed bag, like anything's a mixed bag. You get ones that work really hard and are awesome, and then you get ones that... and, you know, barely ever show up and don't really do anything. Sword Dragon. What? He didn't.
No,
he's completely inactive. Sure he'll maybe be better this time around? Question mark? I don't know, but they probably could have been more discerning this time around. There were 75 approved candidates. That's just ridiculous. Probably almost double what we had last time. Unfortunately, voter turnout did not follow suit. We did have more voter turnout than last time, but it wasn't, like, proportional to the increase in candidates. Which tells me that a lot of these people were like, hey, I could be on the CSM, and didn't really think about the people that they actually have to vote for them to bring to the table.
Yeah, what does this even mean? Cast almost 37,000 votes, meaning we have a 15% increase since the last year's election. We have also noticed a 3% turnout increase since last year.
So what? There was a 15% increase in total votes, which I guess reflected a 3% increase compared to the population.
I getcha.
Which is cool. So the voting bunch was slightly older this year, very slightly. And they also, I don't know why this was important, but she threw in the results of the gender breakdown, which, you know, sort of painfully highlights how overwhelmingly male Eve is. Of people that voted, 96.3% were male. Just like, what? I mean, you think about all the famous Eve women that are out there, and it's like, well, where's the rest of the ladies? I mean, hell, you have a woman that's, again, at a very senior position in the CSM, Sugar Kyle. That's happened plenty of times before. Allie was extremely prominent, would have been a chairwoman if the chair had existed at the time. You had Minxie, chairwoman. It's not uncommon to have women elected to the CSM. So it's not like they're getting in on the back of like some kind of woman's vote. It's like people really do respect these people for just their knowledge of the game. But where are the rest of the women, though? Like, what is going on with this? I think CCP really needs to make some better strides in getting Eve to diversify a little bit more as we grow. Not that there's terribly much they can do, but gotta be something.
I mean, it is just the actual people that voted, right? So, I mean, that's just the breakdown of the 37,000 people they looked at, but I mean...
Well, yeah, other reason that, like, a man would vote more than a woman for the CSM.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's still probably a pretty indicative sample.
Don't know, but that's a demographic equation that we're probably going to have to crack eventually if the game's ever going to grow spectacularly. There definitely are female gamers. There definitely are good female gamers in EVE. And we just need to find a way to get more of them. And so that's the breakdown of the election. So I'm pretty relatively happy with the group. Maybe one or two things that I would have changed, but, you know. We got hit all the important points. We got Steve on there again. We got Scion back. Sugar's back. Mike's back. Andy got on, which is great. I'm very pleased with that. Jane got on. You know, the non-purple shoot guys couldn't ask for a better rep than Jane Fellin. And Manny is on, which is huge. He should have been on previously, but there was a problem with his paperwork, so he had to drop out of that election. So it's good to see him come back.
Yeah, really the only other person I wanted to see on here was Mina, but he didn't run.
I think Cyan would have made a good CSM, and maybe he'll run again next year.
You mean Mina?
No, Cyan Aviander.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I thought you meant...
Yeah, we were a bit surprised. I guess it was a really tough field for him to break into, but I think we were all a little bit disappointed he didn't place on. It's the first time in Noir's history we've run a candidate didn't win. Well, that's just the way the electoral demographics are going. Obviously, our coalition needs to expand and grow. All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Declarations of War. Really appreciate your support, folks. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. Leave a comment. We'd love to have people discussing the episode on the website. You can reach Noir via our public channel, cafenoir.com. Apply to join us in the forums at noirmercs.com. If you are a PvP corp and you're interested in joining No Not Believing and hooking up with our fantastic contracts, awesome culture, really good and always getting better IT infrastructure, and you just want to have a great time and be able to support yourself and your members financially while you're doing it, hit me up in game, Lexave card. Happy to have a conversation with you about it. And with that, good hunting, listeners. Sussy.